Hello, it's Adam A. Donaldson here from Open Sources. This is not the usual introduction to our show because of a snafu with the CR4U archive. The first about 4 minutes of the show from this past Thursday was cut off. But because the first half of the show was an interview with our local Member of Parliament, Lloyd Longfield, any portion of it we think is still newsworthy and noteworthy. So the rest of the podcast will follow. We are just joining the conversation already in progress. So here you go. This is the episode of Open Sources from Thursday, March 31st, 2017.
Yep. Well, the sectors that we're focusing on are all sectors that Guelph is strong in. I mentioned agriculture being one of the key sectors, but also looking at clean technology. So alternate energy, soil technology, water technology, and things around helping the planet, all strong areas for Guelph. So clean technology was a sector, and manufacturing was another, advanced manufacturing and what's going on in Guelph, where we've got really strong growth in manufacturing to the point where we can't keep up with the jobs that they're trying to fill. Mm-hmm. And so the sectors that the budget was focusing on are sectors that Guelph is strong in. So some of my colleagues were shaking their heads, looking at me, going, "Yeah, Guelph." So I always feel like that's a win, you know. When you
agri-food people, up in Guelph,
I know,
there,
you darn Guelph, they're always getting their face into something here.
That's soybean land.
That should be the new town motto: is "Yeah, Guelph."
Sure.
We had a bit of fun just trying to go through the budget ourselves last week, and there were a couple of definitions that we kind of got hung up on. One of them, for me, was supercluster. What's the difference between a cluster and a supercluster?
Well, of course, the supercluster is super. So
that's must be in Guelph, right?
That's what distinguishes it. I think the way I like to look at the difference between a cluster, like the wine industry in Niagara would be an example of a cluster, that regionally they focus on growing grapes and producing wine and marketing around the world. They're very strong on that in the Niagara Peninsula, but really in British Columbia, they've got a strength in that area, and a little bit in the North Shore of Lake Ontario. But it's a regional cluster, where a supercluster is something we're strong across the country. So something like agriculture, where we're strong in soy in Ontario, we're strong in canola out west, we've got great beef, and anything to do with agriculture really applies across the country, whether it's cranberries in British Columbia or fish on the East Coast. So the supercluster is a cluster that really affects the entire country in an area where we could be world leaders. And mm-hmm. So the two things that distinguish for us is a supercluster. We have to have the potential to lead the world, and we also have to be able to draw from strength across the country.
So is this something that can be developed, or is this something that already exists within us?
Well, we've historically been strong in certain areas. Natural resources is another area where we could have a supercluster. But developing areas, so I just came back from Brampton, where there was an announcement on $125 million going into artificial intelligence. That's an emerging sector that we're strong in Edmonton, we're strong in Toronto, we're strong in Montreal, and we've also got some strength in Guelph, of course.
And yeah,
but
Guelph.
But artificial intelligence will apply to anything from surgery and medicine to growing plants to machines and manufacturing. So how do we have machine-to-machine communications, and how do we have machine-to-machine learning, and then you need a different type of workforce to support that. And so then how do you have training and skills programs to support the developing cluster in artificial intelligence, where we are seen as a world leader in artificial intelligence, and actually better than the Americans and some of the other countries that are drawing on our expertise in that area. So earlier today, there was an investment in Ford Motor Company down in Windsor. A lot of that had to do with artificial intelligence, 800 jobs, $1.2 billion of investment going into Windsor around smart vehicles and smart manufacturing. Mm-hmm. So that would be an example of as industry changes, you have to keep up with your university programs and college programs and react to new opportunity in the market. So
we'll get to artificial intelligence in a sec, but I think one of the things that might be missing from this conversation, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, if you're talking about it in Ottawa, is moving the job market in these directions too, because what you're saying is there's this tremendous opportunity in fields like manufacturing and yep. like programming and artificial intelligence and all this. And the flip side is you were also saying that we don't have the capacity and the training for that yet. So is there any discussion here about how we can sort of marry the two?
Yeah, there's in the budget, I won't be able to quote the page number, but on one of the 280 pages, we talk about a new skills center, a $225 million investment to identify new skills and new programs that need to develop the skills that are needed in a changing world. And so we're investing in skills development. We're investing in work integrated learning. So as your job is changing and you're on the shop floor, or you're in the design office, that you could take university programs that would help you keep up with the pace of change in the workplace. So work integrated learning will be another phrase that you'll find throughout the budget and in the year ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And that involves the University of Guelph. So how does the University of Guelph help the workforce? How do we get students into the workforce to develop their work skills, but to bring the skills from the university into the workforce as well?
Right. But there is still the flip side that you know, we're seeing that a lot of people are being left behind too.
Right.
And I'm not sure, and I don't know the answer to this myself, so I don't expect you to have the answer to it, but, you know, there are people who are, you know, in their late 40s, 50s, who, you know, aren't going to be moving laterally from putting cars together up a Linamar to, you know, writing HAL 9000 software.
Right. No, they absolutely. There's social challenges that come along with all this. And we are looking at the phrase that you'll hear over and over from the government, because it's repeated often, is the middle class and those who are working hard to join it. Mm. The middle class jobs of the past are really changing. And so we have to look at what are the other opportunities for people that maybe aren't strong in the skills that are needed for robotics, but there are other jobs out there that we need to develop, and whatever those jobs are, we need to be able to help people transition. So the investments that we have for part-time work, for people, single parents, especially single young mothers, for Indigenous people, people with different disabilities, newcomers to Canada that are working on English skills, there's a whole suite of programs around that, and over $1 billion being invested in skills and training, as well as identifying what skills are out there that we can boost.
It kind of sounds like the skills training is going the other way as well, in that there's some money to train younger people from kindergarten.
Absolutely.
To learn coding. So I guess it's starting not quite from the cradle, but pretty close.
Yeah. Kindergarten.
And I guess it was $50 million over 2 years. Now, does that,
yep.
I guess that will just sort of, is that a blanket like over all school boards and all? I guess the program hasn't really been ironed out yet as to what will happen. But
well, the tricky part is in many of the programs that we're introducing, we're saying the federal government has $50 million over 2 years for coding for school children between kindergarten and grade 12. Well, that falls within the provincial responsibility. So in order to get the money into the provinces and into education programs, we can offer the program from the federal government, but then we have to work out the details with the provinces and territories to actually get them in place, other than on First Nations settlements where we have direct responsibility for education.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I did want to talk about the artificial intelligence thing, because it seems like I actually didn't know Canada had this kind of leadership in this very particular field.
Yep.
And we have had sort of warnings from like some very smart people like Stephen Hawking, who mm-hmm. was like, there's legitimate concerns about us creating artificial intelligence. And I'm wondering, does that come up in conversation at all, that the ethical point of view? Like, we're so desperate to kind of get into these new areas, right, and explore these boundaries, but there is an ethical discussion too.
Well, I think that we have to take up the challenge or hide from it. And we've got a choice to make, to either let somebody else take over where we've been leading, and we've seen that over the years in aerospace and other industries that we had been leaders, or we can say, how do we meet all challenges, including social, ethical, environmental challenges that might be around any of the topics that we're working on? We're also putting gender lenses on the entire budget, which is the first time we've done that. So what is the impact on women? And in particular, women studying STEM programs and getting young ladies interested in the technology training that will lead towards artificial intelligence. The intelligence, it was a company I'm working with in Guelph and another company from New Brunswick that is supporting artificial intelligence. And the question I had was, at what point does a human intervene in these decisions? Mm. So the intelligence will make recommendations, but the choices are ultimately people's choices to say, okay, that was, yeah, I'd forgotten that the machine behaved that way 2 months ago when I tried that and it didn't work out so well. And I'm now getting a warning that, are you really wanting to push that button because it didn't work last time? And so I can see the guys pushing the buttons and I can see the women going, oh, yeah, that's right. So I don't know how you introduce artificial intelligence by gender, but no, it's seriously, we do need human intervention in terms of developing the intelligence and the ramifications around that. And people like Stephen Hawking are absolutely correct that people have the ultimate rights to live in Canada and have access to the quality of life that we're enjoying here.
Mm-hmm.
But we won't have it if we don't keep up with the rest of the world. It'll just simply go past us.
Well, I think you're right about that, because we are seeing that in other areas, you know, things like wind power, solar power. We're facing, you know, China is making huge leaps in that area.
Mm-hmm. But I had a great conversation around hydrogen power.
Oh,
and taking hydrogen, and there's some companies locally that are working on this challenge, putting hydrogen into the ground, into storage areas where natural gas used to be. And when the natural gas reserves are taken out, we've got underground storage areas where we could be creating liquid hydrogen, using hydrogen fuel cells for vehicles and for industrial applications, First Nations applications, and storing that underground for the seasonal peaks that we have in the electrical grid. And there's a whole disruptive technology around liquid hydrogen. And where does that conversation lead you? So to solve some of those challenges, we can be creative and add all the wonderful things that people are able to add, but then you need computing skills and you need to be able to model situations to understand what happens with, you know, natural gas is a lighter molecularly compared to, or hydrogen's lighter molecularly to the carbon chain. So will it work? Will it be stored? Will it not be stored? But a massive potential if we're able to solve that problem. And we'll get a whole new fuel source that's non-carbon based that we could do across North America. So that was an hour-long conversation I had with three local people in Guelph that are working on that technology and clean technology. And there's investments in clean technology in the budget. So, of course, you want to take that forward to Ottawa and say, we've got an idea percolating here. How can we work with the university and these people that are in the marketplace to try and solve some of these problems? And artificial intelligence with human creativity, I guess, is the combination we're trying to get to.
Mm-hmm. So will that kind of fall under that pan-Canadian framework that was mentioned?
That's it.
Clean growth and climate change?
Yeah. Boy, you're good.
We do our homework here.
Yeah, I'll say. You know, in the Energy Committee, we mentioned that, and the Conservatives said, what? So we said, I guess it's a Liberal term. But
can do it, they can do it.
Yeah, you picked it up out of our budget. That's amazing. Way to go. It is pan-Canadian, and the challenge is a lot. Again, I said earlier that a lot of these fall within provincial jurisdictions. So climate change is a pan-Canadian strategy, but then has to go pan-Canadian in terms of implementation by each province and territory.
I do also want to address, there was $7 billion for a new child care strategy.
Yeah.
Is that for the development of a strategy, or is that for actual child care spaces, or is it a bit of both?
It's a bit of both. You'll see in terms, there's some tables at the back of the budget which shows the phase in period of some of these investments. And early in, we're working on the strategy. We've been working on it for over a year. We've got it to the point where we've got an idea of how much it's going to cost for 40,000 spaces to be created across Canada. And then the question is, where is the greatest need across Canada? And those are studies that are currently underway. Mm. You know, Toronto could use all of that and then some, but we don't want everything being in Toronto. So we've got great needs across the country, including in Guelph. And so what's the proper way of allocating the money throughout the different provinces and then throughout the different municipalities? And the money is there. We have to be matched through other programs of the province, of course. And so then we have to work with the province to implement those. But we're saying the federal government is committing to $7 billion. We know it's an urgent need. We know that it's keeping people out of the workforce. We know that there's single parents out there that are unable to afford child care and get a job at the same time. So we're trying to give them a leg up.
And one more thing about the budget, which is the ongoing deficit, the growing debt. And I know that the Conservatives in particular were coming out talking about how they're hearing back from people that, who are wickedly concerned about it and worried about a big tax bill coming for them at some point in the future. And I'm wondering, in terms from the government side of things, how aware are you of the deficit and people's concerns of it?
Well, we're aware of the concerns, and you know, the Conservatives in the House are on the record saying that we're using a charge card that'll be paid off by other people. And that's one way of looking at it. And we could go to a balanced budget and curtail some of these investments that we're talking about. But what we're saying is we need to invest in areas that are going to help the economy and help people in terms of their situation. And so the Canada Child Care Benefit, we rolled out last year. It's bringing $7 million a month into Guelph. Mm-hmm. It's supporting 12,000 families with 22,000 children in Guelph. We could take that away and do something differently, but we're saying we need to help people that are that haven't had a break in years. We need to build the economy. And so what we're gauging on is the debt-to-GDP ratio. Mm-hmm. And the debt-to-GDP ratio right now is about 30.8. Over the next 5 years, we're going to try and get it down to about 29.5. But the debt-to-GDP, which means if the economy is growing, we can afford to absorb more investment. At the end of 4 years, we're looking at our deficit being about $14 billion. If the economy grows more than what we're predicting, if things in the States actually turn out well, which who knows what's going to happen there, we could do better than what we're predicting right now. But we've stress tested everything that we've done, and we've said that we think that over the next 4 years, the debt will get down to $14 billion. So over the course of our government, the debt may be in the $90 billion range. The course of the previous government, it went up by $150 billion. So it's something that we will have to look at over the long term, but what we need to do in the meantime is get people into the economy, spending money, getting money so that they can spend money in the economy to help stimulate the economy through infrastructure investment and other means. And we have to get our exports up. So we've got to build the business of Canada, and that will develop our tax revenues, which will help us pay down the debt in the years ahead.
Well, before we let you go, I do want to get to just a couple more things. And one of them concerns a colleague of yours from the other side of the house who is also in town today.
Who will remain nameless now.
Well, I mean, it's...
His name's Nathan.
Yes, his name is Nathan. You were invited to attend his Everybody Join Electoral Reform bandwagon, his presentation today. Are you planning on attending?
No, I think he's going across Canada doing this. I understand he wants to bring things to the House from his visits to 20 communities across Canada. I've met with the Democracy Group in Guelph on Tuesday this week. We had an hour conversation about electoral reform, what the current state is. We've been getting some ideas from Guelph that I've been discussing with the minister's office. But we're also looking at Elections Canada, the Elections Canada Act, the previous government called the Fair Elections Act, and most others were calling the Unfair Elections Act. So we're repealing those sections to try and give Elections Canada the strength that they used to have and even more strength in terms of prosecuting things that might happen, such as robocalls. Mm-hmm. So we need to get Elections Canada, that's Bill C-33 that's in the House, that has to be discussed. And we also want to have parliamentary reform. So when you try to get me last week, we had 28 votes last week, and they were happening at random times. And so I had a radio interview to do, but I had to go back into the House to make one of the 28 votes. And the vote that we made was brought forth by the Conservatives to stop the debate on the budget. And they voted against their own motion. They were just bringing everybody into the House to debate so that a filibuster could continue. Actually, the guy doing the filibuster had to use the washroom. So that's how silly it's got in Ottawa.
Filibuster faux pas.
I know. So that's how silly it's got in Ottawa, that we need to change the way Parliament works. And it's they're filibustering a bill that is, or not a bill, but a discussion paper that we could have a debate on. How can we change Parliament? How could we change the, like one of the things is having the MPs in their ridings every Friday. Do we want to do that, or do we want to continue with working 10 to 2 on Friday in Ottawa and getting on the plane and getting home at 8 o'clock on Friday and not being in our ridings? Mm. So you can tell where I sit on that one. it's not like we take Fridays off or Saturdays off for that matter. I try and get Sunday afternoons off to recharge before we go at it again in the next week. But we haven't had that debate. So in terms of Nathan Cullen, I mean, he's still focused on what didn't work coming out of a committee. Mm. We need to change the way committees work so that they are more efficient and come up with better all-party recommendations. And that's what we're working on right now, if we can get past the current filibuster. And we also want to change the Elections Act, so Bill C-33. And then I think at some point, you know, we have an unfinished business around the election system and proportional representation. But tonight isn't the time that we're going to solve that problem. We're waiting for a leader from the NDP to be elected. We're waiting for a leader from the Conservative Party to be elected. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking once we've got leadership in those parties will be the time that we come back around and try and use the stuff that we learned from last year's consultations that we spent $3.8 million on and try and get some return on that investment.
Yeah, I almost wanted to softball that one to you because I've gotten like press releases and social media posts and things. It's like, you know, that seemed to phrase you as like part of the problem. I'm like, Lloyd isn't part of the problem on this. Lloyd has been.
Thank you.
Lloyd's been.
I'm working on
Lloyd's
it.
Lloyd's been a great middleman on this because he knows his leader's saying one thing, his people are saying another thing. And, right. you know, it's. And I appreciate the fine line you're walking. You do have an event coming up, I think you probably want to promote.
We've got a few of them.
Yeah.
We've got mental health. Is that the one that you're talking about?
That's what I was thinking of.
Okay,
but sure, whatever you've got coming up.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we had scheduled one for next Friday at the University of Guelph, but we've had to reschedule to the 24th of April at the Evergreen Center from 6:30 till 8 o'clock. We've got a panel of mental health experts looking at how are we delivering service to Guelph, where are the gaps, and how can we help to fill the gaps. End of exams, minister wasn't able to come at the last minute. She got pulled into another job by the prime minister, which she has to do. And so we said, okay, let's regroup. So on April 24th, we're going to continue our discussion on mental health in Guelph. We also have First Nations coming to Guelph. We've got four Grand Chiefs and some university researchers working on boiled water advisories. So building a trusting relationship between our universities and research centers and First Nations to get all of the First Nations off boiled water advisories. We got 18 off last year. We're hoping to get 30 more off this year, and the universities will be able to support that work. So we're working with the University of Guelph on First Nations issues around boiled water. And we've got another roundtable on employment coming up. I'm going down to the States May 1st to 3rd to work with the American government's officials. Our industry committee is going to the States, and we're going to be meeting with the industry committees down there on their Senate and their the House of Commons equivalent. And so we've got quite a few things in the works, but that's the role, and I'm having a blast. I'm really enjoying it, and I really do appreciate the support from the University of Guelph, because whenever I need help on any of these issues, I just 1-800-UofG, and there's somebody. It's like the call a friend option that I've just kind of got on speed dial, and to the point of business development, social development, we're working on affordable housing initiatives, and Jane Launderville is helping us with that and with the Poverty Elimination Task Force. Great discussions there, and that'll be another issue that we'll be working on this year.
And then what are you going to do next month?
Nap.
this food center thing has really got me cooking, I'm telling you. So,
oh, was that intentional? That's like Phil Alt level punnery.
Oh no! Don't put me on the same line as that guy.
Well, Lloyd, we are glad we were able to get you in. If we couldn't get you on the phone, and we look forward to having you back sometime in the future. And we appreciate your time. So thanks so much for coming on.
I appreciate your blog, and I appreciate what you do on the radio here. And this is Democracy at Work. Believe it or not.
Well, we know we find it hard to believe.
It's true.
We try. And we're going to try and give you some PSAs and play a bit of music for you right now. And then we'll come back with news from Trumpland. And you're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
That was Amelia Curran from her album Watershed. I think it's brand spanking new album. Yes, the album, the station, 2017. It says here, and
well, that sounds new.
It's very, very fresh looking. You know, fresh CDs have that fresh look. Release date March 10th. So yes, it is.
It has that new CD smell.
Yes, indeed. And she's playing. I thought it was sooner than this, but she's playing the E-Bar on May 18th.
Ooh.
So you got to wait a little bit, but Amelia Curran.
It'll be here before you know it.
Exactly.
I'm just looking at the name in my notes, Trump, and I started laughing.
Yeah, it's been a while. We managed to dodge that for a while, which is
three
shocking.
Weeks. Yeah.
We tried saying 45. We tried saying that, but, you know.
Well, I mean, it's...
Now we can unload.
But there's so much that intersects with him and what he's doing in the States, and it's kind of hard not to address it at all. But we've gone out of our way the last several weeks, or at least the last 3 weeks, to just try and look at topics that aren't...
Well, that's
In the immediate Trump neighborhood.
Because it's on every channel. Even channels you don't expect, right? It'd be like, you know, the kids' channel would be something. No, I don't know about that, but...
But no, there is something, you know, going on constantly about this. Today, the thing was, in the last couple hours, the New York Times published an article with the names of the people who supposedly showed David Nunes, who is the congressman who's in charge of the Intelligence Committee. He was, you know, it's kind of hard to follow, but at night a couple of weeks ago, he goes over to the White House. Somebody let him into a skiff to see intelligence documents.
Ooh.
So that he then saw that said that associates of President Trump and perhaps President Trump himself were sort of cursorily, I don't know if that's even a word, but
is now
trademark, we own it, but we're caught in wiretaps of foreign officials, which happens. It's part of the whole spy apparatus, is that you watch the spy agencies watch the people who are in the representing foreign countries in the United States. Apparently, in those wiretaps, Trump and his associates were incidentally caught. He goes to the White House the next day and tells Donald Trump this in a meeting, comes out and says to the press, yeah, I saw all these things that said, you know, he was...
Man.
And apparently, this is none of this... All this was news to the Intelligence Committee, which he is the head of. There's some indication that he talked to Paul Ryan before talking to Donald Trump. Paul Ryan, of course, Speaker of the House of Representatives. Paul Ryan had denied this in an interview this morning that Nunes didn't come to him first. So this is just today, folks.
Yeah, I was working. I missed all of it. But it doesn't surprise me at all. I think this, when this is all said and done, there's going to be a fantastic film or two come out of it for sure.
This is like yeah, like
JFK.
Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, an epic. It could be a three-parter or something.
Yeah.
We didn't have to wait a year to see the part three. I don't know. But that's...
Yeah, there's a fascinating article that Daniel Rothkopf wrote for Foreign Policy that's...
Because I want to say fake news. Yeah, but anyway.
it's called the soul-sucking, attention-eating black hole of the Trump presidency.
Oh, and man. It just...
His argument is just that there's so much going on with this because you have that. You have the Nunes stuff. You have, other Russian things. You have the Senate Intelligence Committee looking into it now. You have Jared Kushner his dubious business ties in the past, plus the fact he has like seven different White House roles, and including a new one this week that was
senior advisor, is that what we're calling it? Is that one of his?
That's his main title, but he was put in charge of an office this week to look at how to make government more efficient. And then you have his wife, Ivanka Trump, now having an official role in the White House with an official title and everything.
I think it's assistant to the president.
Yeah. And then you have, the healthcare legislation blew up last week.
Yes.
In spectacular fashion.
But in some ways, not by reasons people think that the Democrats were fighting it. It was what are they called? The Freedom Caucus.
Yeah.
The mysterious Freedom Caucus didn't think it went far enough is part of the reason why it got nuked, right? It's like, no, that's not harsh enough. It's like, we want it all. We want rid of the whole thing. So you've got these varying degrees of people want to get rid of it completely. I guess the libertarian faction, there's the business faction, and then there's I believe there's a kernel of Republicans in there that they would never, ever say that they love Obamacare, but they know it sort of addresses
moderates.
People in there. Yeah, we'll call them moderates, but I don't see anything moderate coming out of there.
They're the two-state
out of
caucus.
The black hole. Nothing comes out. It just goes in and through, and then you're like, what? That just happened? And then, unreal. And, of course, slashing the environment.
Oh, Lordy.
To the bone with the restrictions on coal being lifted, and the hoax known as global warming will finally subsume all of us. I don't know. I shouldn't really joke about that, but when legislation like that comes down, the rescinding of pretty much all the Obama-era measures to combat all of that, when it's coming from a guy that has said several times global warming is a Chinese hoax, I'm sure he hasn't changed his mind on that. So, and of course, to please the people that he was pandering to during the election, I believe I saw one shot in one of the feeds of him shaking hands with presumably a coal miner. So mission accomplished, I guess, in that department. But I mean, the price of coal is still in the basement. So I don't, it's not as if the coal magnates will be making tons of money on this. But
well, even the coal magnates are saying this is not going to bring coal jobs back because
machines do that now. We don't need the pickaxe.
Right.
We don't need the seven dwarfs.
And I saw a thing. I think it was on one of the MSNBC shows last night where they showed that their coal jobs are presently at 750,000 in the United States.
Oh, I didn't realize it was that high.
Yeah, but alternative energy jobs, so think solar, wind, biofuel, are at, 650,000.
Well, so close.
So, but that's growing. The coal numbers are dropping.
Mm-hmm.
So he's throwing his weight behind a dying industry, literally a dying industry. And it has nothing to do with Obama's regulations. It just has to do with the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
It's the coal jobs have been being siphoned off year by year since Reagan.
Be like, bring back the telegraph office and the blacksmith and
right.
the coal jobs, yeah.
But, but the environmental discussion is important. But, of course, it's one of these things that are getting buried by the leaks and the investigations and the Russia and the Bannon and all this stuff. Another thing that's gotten buried, and Rothkopf pointed this out, is that military operations have increased. So you have more operations in Yemen and Iraq. You have 1,000 troops now, 1,000 more troops now moved into Syria, American troops, and you're hearing about all these various incidents where it was that about civilian casualties and wrong things targeted, missions, that don't succeed the way they are supposed to succeed. So, we keep...
Which isn't anything new, really. I mean, that was happening under Obama and Bush and...
Well, it's nothing new, but it's
Vietnam.
It's been ramped up to it was.
I'm not sure as to whether that's... That wouldn't be with the, what was it, $52 billion or whatever they dumped into defense as well. So this is an addition, but it's still the largest in the world. There's a graph making the rounds of comparative, and I think China is second.
Right,
and China's military budget is huge, and I think they have more people per capita, just sheer bodies. But in terms of cash, it's still the States. It's like phenomenal, and what is it achieving? That's the great question, right? Is it one botched operation after another? Do you keep bombing the schools? Do you keep, does it solve the ongoing conflicts that they tend to stick their nose into? Sometimes by request, other times not so much. So,
yeah, it's, that's another thing too.
And
that
at
budget.
One point, that would have been the big story, right?
Right.
And now it's like everything's turned up to 11. right?
Well, the story with the budget would have been like how everything is hacked and slashed in order to put more money into the military. So you have EPA cut, you have State Department cut, you have PBS cut, NPR cut, National Endowment for the Arts cut. And these are like minuscule, like slivers of things that the American government pays for, especially in comparison to the military.
But the base love it. You know, that that big bird, that lefty.
Oh, yeah. Whatever.
Was it Romney? Remember Romney's like, I like Big Bird, but I don't want to pay for him or something? This is sort of it on steroids. It's like, I'm going to kill Big Bird and eat him for lunch. That's what... No,
there was a great video I saw on, Bird, on Facebook where of them letting Elmo go.
Oh, it's like tears. Or not,
no, is this like Elmo's confusion about what's going on? It's hilarious, but and probably not too far from the truth. But I mean, the good part is that there's, if you can call it good, if you can call like unending government gridlock
the
good,
grain of something nice in the
is
bottle.
That, yeah, the exact same stuff that that shot the healthcare reform down is the exact same stuff that's going to shoot the budget down, because it's going to be not too far right for the moderates and not far enough right for other for the Freedom Caucus types. The thing about the healthcare legislation that slays me, well, there's a couple of things. First of all, is they couldn't even get it out of the House. It was going to go to, if they got it out of the House, so if they managed to get enough Freedom Caucus people on side, it was going to go to the Senate to die, because the Senate is much more moderate. And then you have, first of all, after they pulled the bill, you have Trump saying, well, we didn't get any Democrats on side.
Yeah, it's the blame game again, eh? It's like, yeah.
And I wish I was in that room, because I would have said, did you try to get Democrats on side? Because it certainly didn't seem like it. You had like people, you know, you had every Republican in here like whining and dining them and taking them bowling and having a pizza party and what have you. But did you have Nancy Pelosi over to say, you know, hey, is there a way we can work together on health care reform? Because certainly Trump has said things that are more lefty on health care than even the leftiest Republican. Like he's saying, like, I want to cover everybody and make it cheaper.
It's going to be better. It's going to be great.
It's going to be tremendous.
And were they trying to blame Paul Ryan at one point? He was taking a bit of a beating there. And like, oh, it's Paul Ryan's fault. He should step down.
Well, that was
the Democrats' fault.
That was the Judge Jeanine thing.
Just remember, it's never, ever, ever Trump's fault.
Well,
never, ever.
This is the thing, though, is that it hoses, at least in my mind, I never thought of him as a great businessman. But, I mean, it at least in some way hoses this perception of him as this tremendous deal maker and this great businessman. Because how can you not make a deal with politicians on your own side, many of whom are afraid of you, and you can't close the deal on a promise that's been made 100 times to do this thing?
I just picture the minions doing it all, like actual minions, like the movie, just sort of doing all of Trump's stuff. Like Despicable Me 1 and 2. But yeah, important breaking news too. What I saw at lunchtime when I was doing a little bit of a surf on this, sort of our last minute play stuff, is that Ivanka's fine jewelry line is being canceled. And she's going to, this is very important because she is assistant to the president. She's heading more mass market. I think it's Lord & Taylor or something. You know, the $100 or less market for jewelry. Is that not the most important political story today?
Well, it does highlight how dirty it all is, that they're still like running their little businesses.
Have you seen that picture of Angela Merkel giving her a bit of the side eye, like the stink eye?
Yeah.
It's like, here I am, the jewelry maven, and I got to listen to this.
I can't remember what show it was, but it was like, the caption was like, what's the handbag designer doing here?
And that's right, the handbag designer.
And it's, yeah, I mean, the
jewelry saleswoman is now running. Not to say that she's probably quite intelligent. I got, you know. We don't know, because I don't think I've ever actually heard her speak except at the speechy things for the election, but
I seriously question how brilliant any of those kids are, because if they were brilliant at business, they would at some point go out and do their own thing. But they're all there. This is like this little fiefdom, this little kind of like Lannister little caveat thing.
Lannister.
That, yeah, where they're all like part of the Trump operation, and the Trump operation is part of them, and now it's taken over the White House, so now they have to have a beachhead there.
It's
and
a matter of time before the murders begin, right? If it's you're going with the Game of Thrones scenario, right? It's like, meh.
I mean, I hope not, but I mean, still, it just, you know, if they were that brilliant, one of them, Eric Donald Jr. or Ivanka, in some way would go out on their own and say, okay, you know, I've done everything. I've done my duty to dad, you know, now it's time to make a name for myself.
Who knows, maybe Barron is going to be the next big thing.
I would like that, because I think
young up and comer.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe if he moves from New York to Washington, but we'll see if that happens.
Oh, hmm. Very true. That's another subject.
That would save some money. Anyway, another
to deal with these tough times, let's be honest, it'd be nice if marijuana was legalized so we can, you know.
That was my marijuana sound effect there. Really cheap.
But it looks like it's going to actually happen. This is not official yet, but the media was able to get access to some of the discussions that were happening at a National Caucus meeting last weekend that said that the Liberals have set a date of Canada Day 2018. That is when marijuana will officially be legalized. There will be an announcement coming down, according to the CBC, on April the 10th. None of this has been confirmed yet. This is one of those sources say situations. But it seems like what the government is going to do is put this in the hands of the provinces to decide how much, where and when you can buy, and you have to be 18, at least 18, to start smoking up, Johnny.
Because we know that's, you know, everybody waits until the day they're 18 to do that kind of thing. Yeah, I saw it. I didn't read it. It was an article about what it's going to happen in the schools. I was thinking the same thing that's happening in schools now, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was the thing, and they CBC and other news agencies made the rounds of the provincial, I guess, health ministers and whoever was available for comment. I think Rachel Notley commented as well, but interestingly was coming from Quebec, also a liberal run province. And his comment was along the lines of, he's sort of saying, you know, they're pretty much dumping this on us. It's like, It's like the province is going to deal with nearly everything and the feds are going to deal with, I believe it was quality control. That should be easy enough. And you'll always find somebody to do quality control. And I think it was the regulating of the price or whatever. So it was more like the food inspection. But it sounds like the provinces are sort of on the hook. And some of them have been very ahead of the game on this. Like it seems like Manitoba has already passed legislation. I think, what did they call it? The Cannabis Harm Prevention Act, which sort of has a bit of a negative connotation in the title, but I think that this is them getting ready for it being, you know, sort of setting the rules where you can't smoke up in public, and if we find you in a car, we're going to nail you, which you should, driving at least, and of course the schools. So some provinces, I think, are ahead of the curve on this, and others are just sort of humming and hawing and going, I don't know, I guess we'll wait. Marijuana stocks going up with the companies that are in the, I'm going to put it in air quotes, medical, because we know that a lot of these have been set up to be turnkey operations for when it is legal.
Yeah.
Up like 11% and 9% in the stocks. Jeez, I wish I had invested a little differently in my other stuff. It seems there's a company called Aurora Cannabis. They have a place just outside of Edmonton, an 800,000 square foot facility near the airport, primed and ready to go. Also in the market, let's say, are Shoppers Drug Mart really, really want a piece of this.
Sure.
Of all things, you know, you think Shoppers Drug Mart, but, and I don't think they mean just medical. It'll be there with the Dare cookies and everything you're going to need to supplement your legal habit. And in Ontario, they're still touting the LCBO, although I thought the recommendation was from the report federally was that it wouldn't be a good idea to sell alcohol and marijuana together. But I don't know. We'll see how that pans out. Maybe they're going to do a little separate shop within a shop where you can get your...
Did they ever have cigarettes in the LCBO?
No. The LCBO has always sort of been... I mean, there was a period where LCBO didn't sell beer, right? There was a point where you had to fill out a little ticket, which I still vaguely remember. Not me, because I was really young. You had to fill out a form, and the guy was like behind... It was like a bank. You couldn't actually physically touch the bottles. So I'm sure that will definitely be the case with marijuana and that everything's going to be behind the counter like cigarettes.
I do remember that because I would go in to the beer store with my dad when he would pick up beer. And yeah, you would
fill out a ticket.
It would be like a bank where you go up to the counter and you're like, I'd like a 24 of this. And then it would come out on the conveyor.
There's no trust. Yeah. Don't touch that. We don't trust you. So you just went by whatever they advertised on Hockey Night in Canada and you bought that.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Canada's not like one of the a big states. I mean, when you talk about United States states' rights, things are huge, but there isn't an equivalent to that in Canada. We are a much more federalist place, so I understand that, you know, the provinces would sort of bristle at this idea, like, hey, we're dumping it on you. But of course, this is still preliminary. We don't know what the facts of the thing's going to be. This could be something that was floated from Health Canada or something. Like, this is what we're looking at.
I love how they picked Canada Day too.
It does like, seem a bit bizarre.
420 or Bob Marley's birthday or
well,
whatever.
That's the thing.
Yeah,
it's
it was like Canada Day. It's
yeah,
like,
they're going to announce
Mansbridge
it on
retires
April 10th?
This year. Next year, the hooch is legal. It's yay.
But they're going to announce it on April 10th. And it's only because the house isn't sitting on April 20th. So it's it's just bizarre all over. I mean, again, this is all kind of soft. Because nothing official has been said yet. But yeah, I think from the sound of it, it's probably, I think their best case scenario is like an LCBO type operation. I don't know. I don't see like you walking into a Shoppers Drug Mart and getting, you know, your Pineapple Express or whatever. well, even though they do have the Doritos right there by the checkout, It's tough to say.
I think it depends on how stringent the regulations are going to be. Because yeah. we've seen earlier this month, famous pot advocates, the Emerys, who've been fighting this for years and are probably somewhat responsible for this legislation coming down in terms of this just sheer advocacy for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. I've got a feeling that their charges or whatever happened 2 weeks ago for the dispensaries will probably just very quietly disappear because they'll be in the courts for so long.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like they were fairly poorly treated too on arrest. But I suppose that's another story. But I think they're trying to send a message to these dispensaries because you know that they're not just dispensing for medical reasons. It's
sure.
just there's no way. It's not possible.
Well, that's what another part of this I find curious. It's like we've seen the hammer fall in not just in Toronto but Kitchener as well.
Yeah.
You know, places across the country where you know this is the kind of infrastructure you think would be coming in handy if when once it's legalized. You know, we already kind of have a system set up. But the hammers fall pretty hard on people like the Emerys.
Yeah, because Bill Morneau's comment was to get rid of the criminal element involved.
See, right.
The traffickers, the bad guys, whatever you want to call them.
Bad hombres.
Yes. Well, not quite. But so I guess by association, that sort of includes the dispensaries that aren't following the rules. But the thing is right now that it's a bit of a Wild West.
Yeah.
And there's lots of assumptions going on that people can just do whatever. And that's wholly incorrect. You can't just... Mm-hmm. I mean, it's being done, and in some places like BC, they just completely look the other way for the most part. I think it's just kind of like they know this is going on, and they kind of look the other way.
Well, I think they've got the bigger fentanyl problem right now, so they're not
yeah,
really...
Yeah, so it's like... It's kind of funny now how marijuana is like a bit of a shrug. And also, too, like I said, the Emery's cases will probably be dropped, but it sort of begs the question, what happens to people that are in doing sentences
yeah.
for anything to do with just strictly marijuana? Did they bust you on marijuana? What were you doing? I think we're going to see probably in addition to this as a secondary effect piece, some people getting out of jail. You'd have to.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
But that's a piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
Another piece of this, and it was brought up, I think, by Calgary police. I found an article in the Calgary Sun that they're going to be looking for more money. They didn't say whether it's from the province or from the feds, but they're looking for more money in order to help their frontline officers identify drug impairment, which is like, yeah, it's key because if you're going to have make it legal, I assume one of the part of that is going to be it's illegal to operate a car while you're intoxicated.
Well, and there's no real test for it either.
Exactly.
I mean, you have a breathalyzer, but there's no
buttalyzer,
right? There's no
buttalyzer.
It's the sniff test.
That's
right
trademarked
now.
Too.
Yes, I think I should. Yeah. I think I'm working on that in our agri-food hub here. I think I should try and get some money. I'm trying to bring it back to the story number one there. Like,
there is
gonna be a
seed
super,
money.
What was it called? Super, not super,
super cluster.
Hub. Super cluster of yeah. Clusters of bud.
A super bud cluster.
Yeah, I don't know.
When you listen to the show, when we put it on the podcast version next week, don't listen to it while high because you're going to be hearing about super bud and you're going to be...
Where can I get the super bud, man? Yeah. There's nothing on Wyndham Street yet, but there's probably enough empty spots that one of them will become a dispensary, I think.
No doubt. No doubt.
But let's hope.
Anyway, that's
buds.
Where we'll...
Old buds.
Old buds.
Buds should be
we
in
are
the shop.
Speaking of old buds, we are going to have Ward 1 City Councilor Dan Gibson in on May the 4th. We have that confirmed, and we have a soft confirmation right now for Kitchener-Conestoga MPP Michael Harris for the April the 20th, speaking of 420. We probably won't be getting Blaze with Mr. Harris, but That will be the day.
Maybe in 2 years' time, if we're still here.
Anyway, so that's coming up. Guest-wise speaking, we will also have an Earth Day show, and once those kind of details are confirmed, we will announce those. That will be on our website, opensourcesguelph.com, Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on Twitter. And as I said, you can get the podcast version of this show and all previous episodes of Open Sources Guelph on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through iTunes. You can stay connected to me through Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter. I blog, recent one, been back at it, at the Spanner Book. And I should just mention, if you want to get in touch with us, whether, you know, criticism, good, bad, you love the show, you dislike the show, things you'd like to see, guests that you'd like to see, or if perhaps you think you're somebody that could be on the show, we will consider that as well. But feel free to get in touch with us via all of the channels that we've just mentioned, because we love feedback no matter what it is.
We love the people.
Absolutely.
And one of those people is DJ Sounds Good to Me. She's going to be spinning some tunes here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we will be back. We'll be back here next week at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources. We'll see you next Thursday.